ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 4, Text 22. Chapter 4, Text 22.
Yadricha labha santushto dvandva tito vimatsaraha samah siddha vasiddhau cha kritvan kritvapi nibhadyate. Yadricha, out of its own accord, labha, with gain, santushtaha, satisfied, dvandva, duality, atitaha, surpassed, vimatsaraha, free from envy, samaha, steady, siddhau, in success, asiddhau, failure, cha, also, kritva, doing, api, although, na, never, nibadhyate, becomes affected. He who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled although performing actions. Purport. A Krishna conscious person does not make much endeavor even to maintain his body. He is satisfied with gains which are obtained of their own accord. He neither begs nor borrows, but he labors honestly as far as is in his power, and is satisfied with whatever is obtained by his own honest labor. He is therefore independent in his livelihood. He does not allow anyone's service to hamper his own service in Krishna consciousness. However, for the service of the Lord, he can participate in any kind of action without being disturbed by the duality of the material world. The duality of the material world is felt in terms of heat and cold, or misery and happiness. A Krishna conscious person is above duality because he does not hesitate to act in any way for the satisfaction of Krishna. Therefore, he is steady both in success and in failure. These signs are visible when one is fully in transcendental knowledge.
Yadricha labha santushto dvandva tito vimatsaraha samah siddha vasiddhau cha kritvapi na nibadhyate.
He who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled, although performing actions. Here in Rishikesh, we can see that there are many sadhus. There are probably more sadhus per capita than any place in the world. So the wandering sadhus, not the ones who live in ashrams, but the wandering sadhus, they are supposed to live by this statement, yadricha labha santushto. Whatever they get, they're satisfied with. Of course, one reason why there are so many sadhus in Rishikesh is because many pilgrims come here. Maybe one of the reasons the pilgrims come is because of the sadhus. But not mostly the ones who sit and beg. They come to see the more well-established in ashram type of sadhus. But the sadhus, they'll sit in line, as you have seen, at the Ganga Ghat in the morning and evening, and they're waiting to receive alms, and they're not aggressive about it. And apart from them, there are many, many, apart from the ones here, there are many sadhus. Probably the number in India is decreasing. Everything traditional and cultural seems to be decreasing. But there are many sadhus who just wander here and there. They have no means of income. They don't know where their next meal will come from. They don't carry food with them. But they're confident that their needs will be taken care of. They have minimal needs. Just a little food, clothing, little clothing. For many of them, a little pouch of tobacco. And in the winter, some of them have blankets. Here, in many places, here in Rishikesh and Dwaraka, there are alcoves where wandering on the bank of the river, where sadhus can stay overnight. They just lie down, cover themselves with a blanket. And in Kurukshetra also, must be very cold. I was there in the winter once in Kurukshetra. And sadhus are, it's an alcove, so it's covered on three sides, but one side is open. It's very cold, but they lie down there, they rest there. So as Srila Prabhupada noted about these kind of sadhus, even though they may smoke and drink tea, they're not gross sense gratifiers. They're not interested in going to the cinema. They like to visit holy places. Although yesterday in Rishikesh on the other side, we saw on a big heavy motorbike one young, dark, very strong looking sadhu with all long jata, and on the back seat of the motorbike was a pretty young Western girl. That's not proper. In Mayapur, there was one highly respected disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was very strict. He was so strict he hardly had any disciples, because it was very difficult for anyone to live with him. So after he passed away, his one brahmachari disciple who was living with him for so many years, naturally he took over the ashram. He had an ashram. Then after some time, a young woman moved in with him. Yeah, actually, he was a brahmachari, and then I don't know whether he took sannyas before Maharaj passed away. He was sannyasi, and he was living with a youngish woman there. And all the sannyasis in Mayapur, all Gauriya Math sannyasis, they were very upset with this, and they all joined together and told him, "You have to wear white. Either get rid of this woman or wear white." So he changed into white for a few days, and then he went back into saffron and kept the woman. And legally, there's nothing they can do about it. So this is the kind of sadhu you might expect in Kali Yuga. Actually, even at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was going to Shantipur with Nityananda Prabhu, Nimai Pandit, before he took sannyas, then on the way they went past the small ashram of one sannyasi. One sannyasi invited them to come inside, and he was very happy to see two very beautiful young Brahmin boys, and he wanted to feed them, gave them some fruit and things to eat. And Nimai became a little surprised when the sannyasi's wife came out. What is that? I'd never heard of that before. And then the sannyasi, becoming more and more enchanted by these beautiful young boys, he said, I want to give you some ananda. And Nitai, who had traveled all over India and seen all kinds of sadhus, he knew what he was talking about. He understood that this was a tantric so-called sannyasi. And by ananda, he meant wine. So when Nitai said this to Nimai, then Nimai, understanding that he had taken food in the house of a wine-drinking so-called sannyasi, he immediately rushed out and jumped in the Ganga, because they were going along the Ganga path. Because for a Brahmin or a sannyasi to take wine is considered most abominable. So then they floated down the Ganga to Shantipur, with Nitai taking the form of Ananta Shesh and Nimai sitting on top of him. And Vrindavan Das Thakur, he comments in this regard that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his mercy even to a tantric sannyasi, but not to the Mayavadis. He wouldn't eat with the Mayavadis. He wouldn't take the Mayavadis' food until they became Vaishnavas, later on when he met them. Anyway, generally we see that, as Srila Prabhupada noted, that sadhus, you may not have very high opinion or whatever. Some sadhus are highly respected. Here in Rishikesh and throughout India, people who are interested in these things, and in the West also, some people highly respect Swami Shivananda. He was a sadhu. It's not the same. Definitely, he's a what we would call a Mayavadi. But he was a sadhu. He followed principles, and he was interested in the welfare of others, first of all as a doctor in his secular life. And even after becoming a sadhu, he also was interested in helping people medically. So, although we're not very much interested in his teachings, but he was a respectable person. He's not the kind of sadhu who smokes and hangs out with young women. So some sadhus are respectable, some are not so respectable, but as Srila Prabhupada noted, they have some spiritual inclination and they're not interested in gross sense gratification. They have the faith that, well, Krishna will look after me. They may not say Krishna, they may say Rama or Shiva or Ishvara, being more vague, but they have faith that God will look after my basic needs. And they live with very simple life, with no extra needs, and satisfied. Yadricha labha santushta. They're satisfied. So, of course, it's more easy to be a sadhu, in that kind of sadhu, in India than it would be in most other countries. As I gave the other day, I gave the example, if he went 200 kilometers west of here, it'd be different. But I think it's 200 kilometers would still be in Indian Punjab. If we go 500 kilometers west, then we'd be in Pakistan, Punjab, or maybe even further west. But anyway, it wouldn't be so advisable to try to live the life of a wandering sadhu in what is now Pakistan. Just what, 65 years ago, there should have been no problem, but now there is a problem. So people here, they respect that. And that may be in other parts of the world also, where they have a religious culture and they respect religious people and they have the attitude to give something to religious people. After I'd been admitted into Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON and before I came to stay in India, which was in the 1970s, for some time I was on a traveling Sankirtan party in Ireland. And in Northern Ireland, which at that time was undergoing something like a civil war, fight, not really at the pitch of a civil war, but a lot of disturbance. So at night we would park our van away from any city or village, because if we parked where there were people, then during the night, usually both the police and the army, because the army was all over the place trying to keep the peace, not very successfully, they would come and look and see, what's this doing parked here? And they'd wake us all up, and in the middle of the night we'd be preaching to the police and the army and this and that. And they're usually quite appreciative, because we're trying to do something good. They appreciated that. So we'd usually go and park in some field a long way from any people. So one evening we came to a field and some young boys from the nearby farm, they were playing in the field, and they came out to us and said, who are you? What are you doing? And we said, we're monks. And we showed them some books and this and that. So they went away, and after half an hour they came back with a basket of food for us. They went back to their parents and said, oh, some monks, so give them some food. So that culture was strong, especially in the Catholic countries. I don't know what it was like in Poland because of the influence of communism, but Catholicism remained as a strong force in Poland as part of Polish nationalism and anti-communism. So interestingly, I'm going off topic a little bit here, but we find in the Protestant countries where they deny the authority of the church, our own devotees who become devotees in the Protestant countries are much more open to the Ritvikism, in which they deny that anyone can be a sadhu or there's any spiritual authority. You just read the book and directly connect with Jesus. Sounds just like Ritvikism, right? Actually, I'm going more and more off topic here. I'll get back. So it's just come out that there's a big fight going on between different camps of Ritvikvadis, because one camp set up their own GBC and they say, we have to follow the GBC, and the other party says, we're not going to follow you. So I might suggest to them, because they say that there's no difference at all between when Srila Prabhupada was present, physically, personally, and now. So it's just the same, there's no difference. Prabhupada is still living, so you can take initiation from him. Well, prior to November the 14th, 1977, when there were, and there often were, disputes between Srila Prabhupada's disciples, they would go to him, and Prabhupada would give the decision, and that would be it finished until they started fighting again, which was usually quite quickly. So we can tell the Ritvikvadis that, there's no difference. Prabhupada's living, he's still here, just the same as he was before. So go to him and ask him, and he can give the decision. They have a theological problem there. Anyway, we're talking about sadhus. Of course, when Krishna spoke this verse, Yadricha labha santushto dvandva tito vimatsaraha. Samasiddho asiddhavcha.
What's the last line?
Kridvapi na nibhadyate. One who is satisfied with whatever comes of its own accord. Yadricha labha santushto. Who is beyond the dualism of thinking in terms of I and others, hot and cold, good and bad, the duality, who is non-envious, who is the same in success or failure. That's a good one. I should preach that in India where everyone's in success, success, success. Such a person is not bound by the material energy. So when Krishna spoke this, he was speaking to Arjuna. He wasn't specifically talking about Haridwar and Rishikesh sadhus. It's an attitude that we are depending on Krishna. And Krishna will provide. As Srila Prabhupada often said, that the birds and the beasts, they don't go to work for food. Of course, they have to do something. Nahi suptasya singhasya pravishanti mukhe mrigam. That's another example, that even the lion is the king of the jungle, but he has to go out and catch his food. But they don't have any specific plan for doing so. You see, the birds, most birds rise a little bit, or they awake around sunrise or a little before sunrise, and they don't immediately start looking for food. They first thing they do in the morning is have Mangal Arati. They all start singing. How do the scientists explain that? Did they ever work that out, why the birds start singing? What's the evolutionary explanation of that? What's our explanation? It makes Krishna happy. He's also waking up. He's very sweet to hear. We don't hear the crows at that time. We hear the very sweetly singing birds. Not only in India, in the West, everywhere. The dawn begins with sweetly singing birds. So they're not worried where our food will be. They get it. We don't find any bird that's starving for lack of food, although certain populations of birds may decrease if they don't get their food, just like the population of house sparrows is decreasing all over the world because, well, there are various theories about that. One reason is modern houses are not built in such a way that they can make their nests in them. Anyway, the bird gets their food. The elephant in the jungle, which has to eat, Srila Prabhupada said, 1 ton of grass every day. I don't know if it's that much. Or whatever he said. Krishna provides. So will he not provide for devotees also? That Shukadev Goswami, who is a wandering sadhu, he also said what is that verse? What is that? In the road are there no clothes lying? Charena na patina, I can't remember. Anyway, the last line is, I can't remember that either. Why should the Danadura Madandhan? Why should the learned persons, Chirena King Patina, why should the Kasmad Pajanti Kavayo Danadura Madandhan? Why should the persons in knowledge flatter persons, other persons, who are blind and maddened by wealth. Why? There's no need. You can get some rags if you want to cover yourself. Sukadev didn't bother with that. If you want to cover your body, you can find some rags lying in the street, or some sadhus used to take from the burning ghat, from the smashan. If there's some bodies they don't, especially if there's someone unknown, or they start to burn and they don't bother to watch, they just leave it, and then the tantrics take the body and the sadhus can take the cloth. Food, the trees, they're giving fruit. You can lie down on the ground. You can use your arm for a pillow. Water, drinking water, you can get everywhere, except nowadays the rivers are all polluted. The caves, they provide shelter. So, kasmad bhajanti kavayo dana durma dandan. Why then should we flatter the people who are puffed up and blinded by their wealth? So Krishna will provide. That's the idea. Krishna will provide. Most sadhus beg. But not very aggressively. And there may be some sadhus who don't beg at all. That's another level. That's described about Madhavendra Puri. Ayachit Vritti. That was following the example of Dattatreya, who's described in Bhagavatam. That's one story. There's another story. For Ajachit Vritti means that he never asked anyone for anything. If someone voluntarily gave him something, he would take. If not, he would not eat. That's all. If Krishna inspired someone to give him something to eat, he would take. Otherwise, no. That's all. Then Dattatreya, described in Bhagavatam, he had the ajagara vritti. Just like a python, he would stay in one place. He wouldn't go anywhere. And if someone gave him something to eat, he would take it. If not, no. That's all. Raghunath Das Goswami, he was the son of an extremely wealthy father, but after he renounced all of that, he became the most renounced in his practices of all the six Goswamis, who were all very renounced. When he first came to Puri, his father was sending money to him every month, which he accepted. Kept his father happy, but he wouldn't spend the money for himself. He would spend it for inviting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once a month for prasadam. So he bought many lavish foods, and with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come some of his associates. Then because the invitation to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was directed through Swarup Damodar Goswami. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though Raghunath Das had completely surrendered everything to him, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made a system that he didn't deal with Raghunath Das directly. He put Raghunath Das under the care of Swarup Damodar. So after some time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu noticed that Raghunath Das, he's not inviting me anymore, because those invitations would come via Swarup Damodar. And Swarup Damodar explained to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living in Puri as a sannyasi, that he stopped accepting money from his father, thinking that it's not good to accept money from materialistic people. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with this. He asked then how is Raghunath Das living? So Swarup explained that Raghunath Das, he, at the end of the day, each day, when the shopkeepers who sell prasad, they close their shops, then he stands there with other sadhus, and he just stand, and then the shopkeepers, whatever leftover rice or whatever they have, they give to those sadhus. So this is an old time-honored system by which sadhus, once a day, they'd get something to eat, and the rest of the day they'd be free to do bhakti or whatever else sadhus might do. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was pleased with that. Then after some time, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Swarup Damodar, how is Raghunath Das passing his days? So Swarup said that he stopped begging, or stopped standing at the gate to accept prasadam, because he thought that this is something like some kind of prostitution. Because when he sees one merchant, he thinks, oh, this one, he never gives me anything. And he sees another one, he says, oh, he often gives me something. So it's like something like a professional prostitute who sees, oh, this is one of my regular clients. Oh, this one's no good. So Raghunath Das, he didn't like the mentality that went with that. That he felt, or he expressed, that was inherent in that means of begging. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked then, how is he living? How is Raghunath Das living? So then Swarup explained that the rice of Jagannath, which is transcendentally nirvikara, its transcendental nature never changes, but after some time it becomes inedible, rotten, you might say. So that is thrown out. And Raghunath Das goes and takes that. He washes the outside piece of the rice. Those who cook rice, they know it has an inner hard piece and an outer soft piece. So the soft piece is the piece that becomes rotten, you might say. Although we don't usually say that in relationship to prasadam. So he would wash that outside piece and he would take the inside piece with a little salt. That's how he's living. That's renunciation. So, that is the, practically that's the limit of renunciation. Also, it's described about Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. When they were living in Vrindavan, they would take their food. Every 2 days they would take some buttermilk in their hand. This is Raghunath Das when he was living in Vrindavan. And at the time when he would take that, he would lament that now I'm indulging in sense gratification just to maintain my body. So that kind of renunciation is inimitable. We should not try to imitate that. But the attitude of a devotee is to depend on Krishna. That's not just for sannyasis. Ananyas chintayanto mang yejanaf pariyapasate te sham nityabhi yuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyam. One who always thinks of Krishna, is engaged in Krishna's service, Krishna provides everything that they need. So one may say, well, okay, all right, I won't do anything, I'll just chant Hare Krishna. But what if Krishna doesn't send anything? Then you're not fit. then you're not fit to live like this. Or if you try and you don't get food for 1 or 2 days, you say, well, what happened? Krishna didn't send anything. Krishna says, I give them what they need for their practice of yoga. So if Krishna decides that you need nothing, you have to accept. That's all. You can't demand. Okay, Krishna, now bring this, 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 and this. Then that's not the mood of a servant. That's not the mood of a maintained servant. That example is given that a devotee is like an animal, like a bull, who is tied up by his master, and the master, he takes him out to the field and makes him work, and the bull has to work, and the master gives him food, the bull accepts whatever, whenever the food is given, the bull can't demand, now you feed me. Just whenever the master wants to, generally he will, but he doesn't demand. Now I require this, this, that, and that. Just a small example from my own miserable life. Some years ago in London, England, I was attending the Rath Yatra festival there, and the festival or the parade finished in a park in London, Battersea Park. And when the devotees arrived and they started manning their stalls and their booths, there was some interlude in between arriving and then the ongoing program at the park. So I was standing around talking with His Holiness Jayadvaita Swami, and one English woman, not a devotee, came up to us and asked us a few questions. What is this Hare Krishna movement, blah, blah, blah. And then came one of those often asked questions, at least outside of India, it's a very often asked question. Well, how do you live? Where do you get money from? And Jayadvaita Swami said, well, Krishna provides everything. And she said, yeah, okay, but, you know, practically, how does it happen? And he said, well, Krishna provides everything. She said, well, what about your food? And he said, Krishna provides. She wasn't satisfied with the answer and she walked away. 2 minutes later, a devotee came up with 2 plates of prasad and said, Maharaj, would you like to take prasad? We didn't make any effort to get it, and I don't know about Jayadvaita Maharaj, but I wasn't even aware that there was prasadam being served at that time. But Krishna provided. Krishna provides. We should have that faith. But there is also another injunction, or other injunctions, just like this. I just said that. Nahi suktasya singhasya pravishante mukhe mrigam. The animal doesn't go up to the sleeping lion and say, just open your mouth a little bit so I can get inside. In Gita also, Krishna says, niyatam kuru karma tvam, karma jayo hi akarmana. That one should perform one's prescribed work. Working is better than not working. Of course, this is all in the context of work, which is ultimately to be offered for yajna to Vishnu as sacrifice. So work in Vedic culture, it's not just to get facility for ahar and nidra bhaya maitum. It's not only for eating, sleeping, mating and defending, but it is meant for the sake of dharma. Work is dharma. If one is within the Vedic culture, then one has to work as a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or woman. There is Brahma Dharma, then Raja Dharma, and the Vaishyas, Vaishyavritti, Shudras, and Stri Dharma. And that involves various kinds of activities, but that is all ultimately offered to Vishnu in Yajna. So one has to work, but at the same time, we should know that we are not the cause of the result of that work. Kamanyevadhikaraste mapaleshu kadachana. We work, there's a result of that work, but we should not be attached to that, to the result of that work. The result is given by Krishna, and it is meant to be offered to Krishna. He gives everything. And also, we should understand that even though we're working, and we're working for the purpose of getting some result, but that may or may not happen. You can never tell. Anything can happen at any time. So, what will happen in future? We don't know. In Islam, there's that very good saying, Inshallah. If God wills, I shall go to such and such a place. If He desires. We are dependent, we're not independent. We can make so many plans, but ultimately everything depends on Him. Even if we're following the Vedic process, we're not these karma mimamsakas, that we do some work and now I should get the result. I did some punya karma, so I must get the result. God is bound to give me a good result. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was in Navadvip, in his Grihastha Lila, he once asked Srivas, his dear devotee, one of the principal devotees in Navadvip Lila, in whose house Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would perform kirtan every night for a year. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to him once that, Srivas, you have a family, you have servants, but I never see you doing anything to get any money. You don't do anything to maintain your family. As a brahmana, you can go and beg, but you never go and beg. You could teach, and then your disciples would be expected to bring something, but you don't do anything for income, so how do you live? And Srivas replied, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, well, what does that mean? He said that if for 3 days nothing comes to my home, then I'll go and drown myself in the Ganga. That's all. Just, he's intimating that, well, Krishna is maintaining. It never came to such a situation. So there's never any shortage in his home, even though he does nothing. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu blessed him that even if Lakshmi Devi herself has to go begging, there will never be any shortage in your home. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the husband of Lakshmi. On the other hand, there was another great follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was Vasudev Datta, who was most liberal in his outlook. He was prepared to suffer all the sinful reactions of all the jivas in the universe so they could all get liberated. So he was very interested in, committed to helping others, but that wasn't, you could say, very practical for a householder is that he didn't manage his family affairs. He would get something and he would give it away to something else, and his family affairs weren't going on very satisfactorily from his family's point of view. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appointed Shivananda Sen, who was an expert manager. He managed all the devotees coming from Bengal to Puri, and then he interacted with the devotees in Puri to arrange for all their residences and food. Then he managed them all to go back. You can imagine just walking, no cell phones in those days, no phones of any kind, and you have to arrange in advance for their lodging and their food. And you can never be sure how much time it will take to go, because sometimes you get held up by the tax collectors along the way. So Shivananda Sen was very expertly managing this, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put Vasudev Datta, he put him under the care of Shivananda Sen, that, okay, you be liberal and Shivananda will manage your family, you manage your finances. Of course, there's the very well-known example of Tukaram, who was in the same mood. Not only did he do nothing to maintain his family, because he was always absorbed in praising Vittal, but he was almost an obstacle in maintaining it. He would do all kinds of things which would look stupid and which would cause problems for his poor, suffering wife, who just wanted to be an ordinary Hindu housewife, but she had this, what she considered, this madman as her husband. So Krishna maintained him also throughout so many difficulties. And ultimately he went back to Godhead, and his wife stayed behind, at least according to the film. So for householders, the general example is Janak Maharaj. Krishna gives that example of Janak Maharaj, who was a pure devotee of Krishna, father-in-law of Ramchandra Bhagavan. But he was very responsible also. Krishna cited the example. Of course, it's not that a pure devotee is irresponsible, but from the worldly point of view, he might seem to be. So, Krishna cited the example of Janak Maharaj to Arjuna, that Janak, he was a great pure devotee, but he was very responsible in his worldly affairs. And as a pure devotee, he didn't need to be, but yad yad acharati shreshthas tad eveta rojana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tadanuvartate. For a pure devotee to be totally detached from the world is quite suitable, but it's not suitable for someone who's a conditioned soul and who needs to become purified. So Janak Maharaj set the example of being a pure devotee and at the same time acting in a manner which persons who are not on the same elevated platform could follow and become purified by doing so. So a householder devotee should depend on Krishna and at the same time make arrangements for his family. We're not saying that Tukaram was wrong or Vasudev Datta was wrong. They were, of course, on a very high platform, which we shouldn't imitate, nor should we imitate the platform of Raghunath Das. But the example is there of Janak Maharaj, and Krishna didn't want Arjun to act in a manner which might be copied by others, to give up their duties because they found them troublesome, which is mentioned by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, that to give up your worldly duties just because you find them troublesome, that is a symptom of rajoguna, the mode of passion. So a devotee depends on Krishna, but he works also. There is that word is there in Sanskrit, durbhiksha, which means famine, or it literally means a time when it's difficult to beg. Sadhus are begging food, but when there's very little food available, then it becomes more difficult to beg. This madhukari system is there. In people, they go to 7 homes, take a little from each home, they don't burden their householders, and their need is taken care of. But if the householders themselves don't have food, then how will they give to others? I remember in my childhood seeing a film on TV about a famine in China. And I just remember one scene from it in which one man in this stove, he had a big pot and he was cooking, and then all the people from the village came and attacked his home and said, "You're cooking, you've got food, you have to give it to us." He said, "Okay, you can take it." And they looked in the pot and there was a big pot of mud. He was heating mud and he was going to feed that to his family. He said, "Why are you eating mud?" He said, "It's hot and it fills the belly." I just remember that. I don't know what the effect of eating hot liquid mud soup would be. Recommended? I don't think so. So, in durbhiksha, in the time of famine, even the sadhus may have a hard time. Everyone has a hard time. Srila Prabhupada, he recounted that the British artificially created a famine in India during the Second World War years. And it's quite well documented that Churchill in London was deliberately making a famine with the idea that people having no other recourse, well, one thing was he was a complete demon and he actually wanted many Indians to die. It came out in his correspondence. He said, "Let them die." They said, they're nasty people with a nasty religion and they breed like rabbits, so better they die. Then the next time when the governor of Bengal, that was his first reply to the governor of Bengal, when food was being exported from India to Sri Lanka where there was no shortage. Then when the governor of Bengal, I think his name was Curzon, he wrote to Churchill and said, so many people are dying. And Churchill's only reply was, "Why hasn't Gandhi died yet?" He didn't like Mahatma Gandhi. So there was a famine and so many people were dying. But Srila Prabhupada said that he was a householder in Calcutta at the time, and he said that for my family there was no problem. And when I inquired from all my different godbrothers that even though the price of rice went from 1 rupee per mun, 40 kilos or whatever, it went overnight from 1 rupee to 40 rupees, and then no one could buy it because the merchants, they were also stocking it. That also pushed up the price. So he said that myself and none of my godbrothers, we never had any problem. Krishna provided. So we should have that faith. We should do our required work and at the same time depend on Krishna. And if Krishna doesn't send anything, we should take that as Krishna's mercy also. Yadricha labha santushto. Whatever you get, you should be satisfied. That's for the maintenance of the body. In another sense, the devotee is never satisfied
because he wants to see everyone become Krishna conscious.
And especially those who are preaching Krishna consciousness, they should not unnecessarily neglect the body. They should neither be totally absorbed in the body nor neglectful of it, because the body has to be maintained for engaging in Krishna service by preaching Krishna consciousness.
Hare Krishna.
So I hope you're satisfied with whatever you got in that lecture.
Hare Krishna. One question.
Has this got anything to do with the class? It doesn't seem like it's going to have. So you're going to say the next line, Vaishnavanang yatha shambhu. But what's it got to do with the class?
So, Ada Narada Yama Sindhu Bhagavati.
Okay, I have a counter question. What's this got to do with the class? We should stick to the subject. Hare Krishna.